how can you be secure as a government or as a country if you're not allowed to speak out and have freedom of expression?
Hello, and welcome to Insights from Abroad. This podcast is coming to you from the Office of Global Perspectives and International Initiatives within the College of Sciences at the University of Central Florida. Our mission is to support international academic programs at the university. My name is Andrea Garcia. Today I am joined by Laura Olson to discuss her life and experiences in working for human rights. Ms. Olson, thank you for being here today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
So listeners can have some background, Ms. Olson has served as the director of the Human Rights Program at the Carter Center since July 2017. Prior to her duties at the Carter Center, Olson served as the Immigration Section Chief for the Department of Homeland Security Office for Civil Rights and Civil Liberties, or the CRCL, since 2010. During her time in federal service, Olson served as acting director for the CRCL Programs Branch, as well as senior policy advisor to the Department of State Special Envoy for Guantanamo Closure. Earlier in her career, Olson worked as a legal advisor for the international community of the Red Cross. So to begin, what inspired your passion for human rights?
Well, I have to say unequivocally that it's my parents. Human rights, I think, start at home, and my parents have worked in the medical field, and I grew up watching how they would treat their patients. For example, when I was a very young girl, I remember going into the clinic with my father, and I'd see people that had amputees or maybe couldn't speak so easily because of a stroke, and I would watch how my father would interact with them. It wasn't any differently than how he interacted with me. Or growing up in northern Minnesota, there's a marathon every year along the Lake Superior, and we went to cheer on the runners, and I watched my father, and who he clapped the loudest for was the man in the wheelchair doing the marathon. And that struck with me, why did that person inspire him the most? And so instilling in me the value of each person and respect for each person despite our differences is what has led me to want to work in human rights.
And during your studies, you volunteered with the Defense for Children International in the Palestine section, a church in Bethlehem, and on a kibbutz in Israel. Can you explain how these experiences have impacted your views on human rights?
It reinforced to me the importance of each and every person, for every person to be able to live in dignity, and that we all are equal in rights, that we all need the opportunity to thrive. It also taught me the importance of listening. If we're going to work through the differences that are out there, we have to hold true to the fact that we all are equal in dignity, but we must not forget to listen to one another.
And moving on to your career experiences, earlier in your career, you worked for the International Committee of the Red Cross for several years. Can you briefly discuss your time in the ICRC?
Well, I worked for them for over 10 years, but I'll try to be brief in describing my time with them. When I worked for the International Committee of the Red Cross, I focused on international humanitarian law, which is the law that regulates armed conflict, which is a different branch of law than human rights law, although they both seek to protect the individual. I started as an intern there, but I also had the opportunity to work for 3 years in Moscow promoting the teaching at universities and academic circles of international humanitarian law. I also worked as a legal advisor in the ICRC headquarters in Geneva, working on human rights and international humanitarian law and their relationship, and also focused on enforced disappearances and representing the ICRC at negotiations for the development of that treaty to help prevent enforced disappearances. And then finally, I worked for them in Washington, D.C. as a legal advisor covering their work related to the United States and Canada. It was during the time of the Afghan and Iraq wars. It was early 2000s, as well as the issues related to Guantanamo Bay and the detainees held there.
Thank you. And in 2010, you began working for the Department of Homeland Security, where you served as acting director for the Civil Rights and Civil Liberties Program branch. Mm-hmm. How did federal service differ from your previous career experiences?
Yes, my main position at the Office for Civil Rights and Civil Liberties was the head of the immigration section, but I did serve for over a year as the acting director of the whole programs branch in which the immigration section sat. Well, it was my first time in government. I had worked for the International Committee of the Red Cross before, I had worked for an NGO before, but I had never worked for government. But it reinforced for me that we can all be human rights defenders, and there are human rights defenders in government as well. Basically, being in government working to protect civil rights and civil liberties gives you the opportunity to be there while policy is being made versus on the outside trying to influence it. Granted, as an office for civil rights and civil liberties, you also were always pressed to prove your added value. And that's what I think this office did and continues to try to do. That is the challenge. Whether similarities of still advocating for civil rights and civil liberties, you have the opportunity to do it from the inside.
How has your experiences in the ICRC and the Department of Homeland Security prepared you for your work in the Carter Center?
Well, first, it's the knowledge of the law, both international humanitarian law and human rights law, and being able to see them put in practice, whether by the International Committee of the Red Cross work in situations of armed conflict or even with civil rights and civil liberties at the Department of Homeland Security. Also, I had the chance, particularly at the ICRC, but actually also at the Department of Homeland Security, to work with international organizations like the United Nations. One of my responsibilities as legal advisor at the headquarters at ICRC was to be one of the representatives to the Human Rights Commission, which is now the Council. And I was also a representative of the ICRC at treaty negotiations, as I mentioned earlier, the Treaty on to Protect Persons from Enforced Disappearance. So having that experience at the United Nations is important given the history of the work of the Carter Center. I've also now had the experience of working both in the nonprofit sector, like ICRC, but also the government side of things. And the Carter Center works with everybody, from high-level government officials to local community members. All are equally important, so having those type of different experiences, both as the nonprofit but also government, I hope is added value for the work at the Carter Center. And finally, even prior to joining the Carter Center, which has this international focus, I had the opportunity through my work to live in many places around the world. One of my majors undergrad was German, so I managed to live there for my junior year abroad. I took time off from law school. You'd asked me about my time in Israel and in occupied Palestinian territory. But with the ICRC, I was able to live in Russia, and I lived in Geneva with the Red Cross. And these experiences really helped me understand how much I did not know and how much I needed to listen and how exciting the world can be and that differences are something to be appreciated. And since the Carter Center is taking me now to even other places I've never been around the world, I hope that excitement and curiosity that has only grown given my international experiences will just continue to grow and be an asset at the Carter Center, and we can accomplish the work that the center wishes.
You expressed that a reason for your interest in working for the Carter Center is so your work may once again have an international focus. How does the Carter Center work towards this international focus?
Yes, well, I had some international focus at DHS because I also helped the Department of Homeland Security prepare itself for reporting to the treaty bodies at the United Nations and working with the U.S. interagency to prepare U.S. treaty reporting obligations. But the Carter Center and President Carter, not wanting to step on toes of other presidents that followed him, did have a particular focus for the center to work internationally. So because of that, that is really where the work and the programming and the expertise of the Carter Center has developed.
For the listeners, can you describe what you do for the Carter Center?
Well, I am the director of the Human Rights Program, but maybe I should just explain what is the Carter Center. Carter Center is a nonprofit organization founded by President Carter and Mrs. Carter after his presidency, where they wanted to continue to do the work that he had begun, focusing on human rights and health and alleviating suffering. In the Human Rights Program, we support President Carter and Mrs. Carter in whatever priorities they set. We work to fulfill that, whether it's helping to respond to individual concerns of human rights defenders that write to President Carter, but we also engage in programming with, the priorities of President Mrs. Carter, focusing on women and girls and focusing on human rights defenders. At the Carter Center, you have health programs and you have peace programs, and the human rights program sits in the section on peace. And human rights, how the Carter Center envisions peace is that there are four pillars of peace. You need to resolve conflicts, you need democracy, and you need rule of law based on human rights. So I help the center and President Carter and Mrs. Carter fulfill their priorities in relation to the human rights aspects of that work.
How active are the roles of the Carters today in the programs?
While they have started to step back, I think that doesn't always necessarily mean much for President and Mrs. Carter, they are still very present and active in setting the priorities.
And moving on, in what ways has the Carter Center worked closely with the High Commissioner for Human Rights at the United Nations and the other High Commissioners?
Yes, the Carter Center and President Carter himself actually helped coordinate an advocacy campaign that resulted in the creation of the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights. He personally contacted dozens of governments to urge them to support the proposal at the United Nations. Since that time, the Carter Center has organized expert consultations with high commissioners from 1995 up to 2013 to explore various aspects of the office, with the aim to strengthen it and to professionalize the office. The Carter Center helped organize a global campaign in the year 2000 to double the budget of the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, and organized expert consultations to help coordinate the work of the special rapporteurs and other special procedures with the United Nations Human Rights Treaties bodies. And in fact, in about 2 weeks, we will be having a special rapporteur, Michelle Force, join us for an expert consultation focusing on human rights defenders. So the Carter Center and President Carter was there at the beginning and continues to be. The Carter Center also played an important role in the negotiations creating the International Criminal Court, as well as the establishment of the UN Human Rights Council that replaced the UN Human Rights Commission.
And what would you say are the most pressing human rights issues today?
The most pressing human rights issues are human rights abuses against women and girls. They have been the most pressing human rights issue for a long time, and they continue to be. At the Carter Center, that is why working on women and girls' rights is so central. President Carter has also expressed that this is the most serious human rights abuses that are out there. But we want to work with women and girls and on women and girls' rights, not just because they are the first victims, but also they are the best catalyst for change. The other most pressing issue is to understand that all human rights need to be addressed, that they are interdependent. And what do I mean by all human rights? Often, particularly in the US, we hear about civil and political rights. So the right to free speech, or you know, the right to participate, to vote, to be free from torture. But other rights are equally important, and those are economic, social, and cultural rights, right to health care, an adequate standard of living, the right to education. And if we do not focus on all of these rights, we risk undermining even the civil and political ones we want to protect. So going forward, there needs to be more focus on a holistic approach to all human rights.
Thank you. And over the past few years, much of the work of the Human Rights Program has been centered on mobilizing faith for women and girls initiative in Nigeria and Ghana. The program offers human rights training to local religious leaders who then make projects that address abuse and discrimination against women and girls in their communities. What has been the biggest challenge the program has faced, and what changes have you seen in the communities?
One of the biggest challenges, I think, working on many human rights, and then this program specifically, is often what we're trying to change, if it's to end abuse against women and girls, are changing social norms. And so social norms do not change overnight, because there is a sanction if someone does not respect a social norm. And so the challenge has been understanding that changing norms takes time, and it takes a large number of people. Another challenge is, you know, we're working with religious and traditional leaders as a Western organization. Now, because President and Mrs. Carter have such a strong positive reputation in Africa for all the work during his time as president, but even subsequent to that, particularly in relation also to health programs or election monitoring, that hasn't been as much of a challenge. What we see as an impact is watching individual community members, once they realize that they have a right to speak, they have human rights, they have a voice, they have a right to be free from violence, how that changes their perception and what they think then they can do for their own communities. Part of the importance of it is them seeing that they have these individual rights, but they're actually connected to a larger community. That there are these international treaties out there, or an international community that says that all of us have these rights.
Thank you. And in a previous podcast, you've expressed that you hope U.S. policymakers will recommit to human rights leadership in the world by standing with human rights defenders. Can I ask you, how important are the roles of human rights defenders worldwide?
They are essential. I mean, we all can be and are human rights defenders, but human rights defenders are those on the front lines, ensuring that all of us can have the freedom that we want. So they remain core to the focus and ensuring solidarity with them that the Carter Center has.
What actions can policymakers take to recommit to human rights?
Well, they can take the time to listen to human rights defenders. They can ensure when they make decisions, let's say on where the U.S. funding is going to be spent, that the human rights considerations are taken into account. And then they can also stand up for human rights defenders who are in need, whether and maybe particularly under threat. And the Carter Center has at times brought to the attention of policymakers, members of Congress, individual human rights defenders and their cases, and those congressmen have written letters or done other activity to help protect the human rights defender.
And going back to the question, how has the U.S. policy towards human rights changed over the years?
President Carter made human rights a central component of U.S. foreign policy, and unfortunately, since he's left office, we see that human rights is not as much a focus of U.S. foreign policy. For him, it was integral to the security of the U.S. and not just other countries that we focused on the human rights around the world. As President Carter wrote in his memoir, Keeping Faith, I was often criticized here and abroad for aggravating other government leaders and straining international relations. At the same time, I was never criticized by the people who were imprisoned or tortured or otherwise deprived of basic rights. When they were able to make a public statement or to smuggle out a private message, they sent compliments and encouragement, pointing out repeatedly that the worst thing for them was to be ignored or forgotten. Today, I would say, if we are to strain international relations, I'd hope it be for the purpose of protecting people. It's me, not President Carter, saying that. But again, we hope, and through the work of working with human rights defenders, bringing them to Washington, D.C. on occasion to help emphasize the important role the U.S. can play and that human rights does need to be the central component.
And can you explain the integral relationship between security and civil rights? Why do you think there can't be a balance between the two?
Yeah, I think I say there can't be a balance because it's the wrong picture. It's the wrong analogy when you talk about wanting to be secure. How can you be secure as a government or as a country if you're not allowed to speak out and have freedom of expression? When one needs to develop measures to protect, because I want to be safe, I think all of us want to be safe, but we shouldn't think of the measures to give us that safety and then afterwards see, oh, let's make sure, or what about those civil rights, and think about them after the fact. We need to incorporate civil rights and civil liberties and or human rights into the strategy to make us safer. So that's why it's not balancing one against the other. If you do this much security, you've got to protect civil rights this much on the other side. It's actually they need to be integrated. The more you're protecting human rights and civil liberties, the more you will be secure. And the actions and steps you're going to take to become more secure will achieve that goal.
And in what ways are human rights issues more challenging now than in the past?
Well, with the rise of authoritarianism and, you know, the threats that pose to democracy, the challenges to human rights defenders where it's not just their physical threats that they face, but also new laws that make it difficult to associate, to speak out, these are aspects that are more challenging. And contributing to that is the withdrawal from multilateralism, whether it's the Paris Climate Accord or others. So there are more challenges, but we also need to remain hopeful because the human rights defenders, which can be all of us, are still advocating to support human rights and make change on the ground.
And last question for today, what do you think younger people can do to support human rights initiatives?
Youth are central. They're very important. And what can you do? You can volunteer to become active in an area that you care about. You can work on an area that interests you. Eleanor Roosevelt was the only woman that helped draft the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And she always spoke about human rights start small and in small places. So youth, well, you are the future, and it's important that those of us who probably can no longer say that we fit in that category of youth must listen to you. You also need to play your role, to take an active part, but it can also be simple things like how you treat each other, treating each other with respect, how you act daily. Do you stand up to a bully? So youth are central, and we all need to listen more to youth and their perspectives and what they want and expect. But youth, like anyone else, are human rights defenders.
Ms. Laura Olson, I would like to thank you for being here and sharing your experience and thoughts with us. For more information on today's guest or our program, please visit us at ucfglobalperspectives.org. I am Andrea Garcia, and on behalf of the Office of Global Perspectives and International Initiatives at UCF, thank you for listening.